Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your pension is with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie and find out more.
Now, the Israeli military says it's expanding its ground operation into all areas of the Gaza Strip following the resumption of fighting on Friday. This morning, it posted on social media a fresh order for people to evacuate about 20 areas of the Palestinian enclave. Just before we came on air, I spoke to UNICEF spokesman James Elder, who has just left Gaza today. I began by asking him what the last couple of days have been like in Khan Yunis.
Absolutely horrendous. It's just this mix of of fear and blood, if you will. The hospitals just cannot take any more patients, and yet the patients with wounds from the blast or fall under buildings, they just keep coming. And there's just so many people on the move, not really knowing where to go, knowing that they're not going to anywhere with the things they need, water, food, shelter, and they've moved so many times, Sarah. So there's a fear, there's a panic. It felt terrible having to leave today. And, you know, people like, take us with you, give us your water. Now, they're not abandoned, of course. UNICEF is still there, but it's changed dramatically even in the last 24 hours, just in terms of the levels of stress on people who are moving time and again. Of course, many of them are moving amid the trauma of having seen a family member killed. There's no time to grieve in Gaza.
I know that you said on Twitter that, or X, that you feel like you're running out of ways to describe the horrors that are hitting children in Gaza. They are, of course, the worst affected.
Without a doubt, 40% of casualties are children. That's an astronomical number, even in the horrors of war, which is why UNICEF has said it's a war on children. We don't say that things lightly. But, the last couple of days, the ferocity of this war, at least in the south where I was, resumed. And it was more ferocious than at any time. You know, at the hospital yesterday, Sarah, the number of children coming in with wounds of war, with the shrapnel, with the burns, children playing on the street. I saw a little boy who had just been playing with a friend and a bomb blast, and such was the intensity of it that it hurled a bicycle at him, which gave him horrendous wounds. But his bicycle came, you know, flying through the sky. So, yeah, they're suffering a terrible, terrible brunt. They are making up a majority of those wounds in hospitals. And as I say, despite heroic efforts of health staff, they just can't absorb any more patients. But the patients keep coming. Let's make no mistake, the bombardment has been unrelenting.
As you say, there's a lot of confusion in Gaza about where people can go or when they should go or who should go. I suppose to that first question, where can they go? Israel has given instructions as to different places that they should evacuate to. What are those places like, and is there place for people there?
It's a very good question. It's an important question because, you know, the evacuation, you know, given time and safety and safe places to go, of course, get away from the horrors of war. But international humanitarian law speaks to the necessity to ensure those places people go to have the basics, food, water, medicine. They are going to places with nothing, Sarah. They are leaving places where, you know, a girl would queue for 3 or 4 hours to use a toilet, 3 or 4 hours for a teenage girl to use a toilet or a shower. They are going to places where 10, 20, 30,000 people will be, where there's nothing. There is sand and dirt. There is not a single toilet. Imagine, try and take that moment to imagine how that is for a child or a mum to have to, you know, take her child to the bathroom or herself first thing in the morning. There is no bathroom, there is no shower, there is no water. I mean, I was in a hospital when I was there yesterday, and again, the panic, Sarah, starting to grip, you know, people who I've built a rapport with, but the tension is rising because they just don't know what they're meant to do. And you can hear the bombardment very clearly from the hospital. And there was a little girl who would follow me, and I sort of suddenly took that, okay, take a moment and get down to my haunches to see what she wanted. And she just had two empty plastic bottles. Just one of them filled with water. She couldn't get it. It's brackish water, even in the hospital. Imagine being moved again to a place. So that is why we have this great fear that so-called safe zones will become zones of disease. That is backed up by all the experts I speak to across UNICEF, across the World Health Organization, who tell me time and again the fatality rates we have seen for those killed in the bombardments may well be matched by the disease. It has started. Now it's a case of, can we stem it? We cannot stem it without services. And there is no one able right now to provide the type of services on scale, given the speed of movement, the speed of bombardment that they possibly need.
Just finally, in terms of supplies, and you're talking about disease there, I understand supplies have not been coming in, or at least have been severely restricted since fighting resumed on Friday. Can you just give us a sense of what is getting in now, and do medical staff have what they need to help?
I think severely restricted is right. Look, I was, amazingly, it's still happening. I was at the border yesterday. Again, trucks are still coming through that Rafah gate. You know, I saw the things that children need. I saw units of trucks, of blankets, of medicines, of high-energy biscuits, the things that people are asking for. Is it enough? Absolutely not. It cannot in theatre of war. It cannot because of the restrictions that have been for so long. And not, you know, it's so difficult to do distribution, so difficult to get to the northernmost point. We are not stopping. We will not stop. But it does go back. I can't believe that it's feeling like a hackneyed comment. It requires a ceasefire for us to prevent more deaths from the bombardments, but particularly now to stave off disease and get these supplies to people. That is what's needed. I think, Sarah, my last word would be that, but having seen so many crises of different degrees, if I was in Gaza and we had what we had without any war, we just had this humanitarian crisis of people who've been through so much and 60% of homes have been damaged in some way and severe lack of everything, we would have a humanitarian catastrophe. We have a humanitarian catastrophe under relentless bombardment.
James Elder, UNICEF spokesman, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Now, the Israeli Defence Forces said today that airstrikes have hit around 200 Hamas targets in Gaza, a day after Israel announced it was expanding ground operations to the entire territory. Israeli attacks in Gaza have resulted in the deaths of about 15,200 Palestinians since October 7th, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. The war broke out following Hamas's devastating attacks on Israel, which killed 1,200 people. Thomas White, the director of UNRWA, the UN Palestine Refugee Agency, said this afternoon that people are pleading for advice on where to find safety. We have nothing to tell them. For more on what's happening in Gaza today, we're joined now from Tel Aviv by Mark Regev, who's senior advisor to the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And Mark, you're welcome to the programme this evening. What we saw over the last 2 months in terms of the attacks by Israel on northern Gaza was really a devastating amount of deaths and destruction. Is it your plan or is it your expectation that that will be repeated in the south?
We will pursue our campaign against Hamas until we have destroyed their military machine and ended their political rule over Gaza, because, quite frankly, we simply refuse to live next to this terror enclave which threatens to attack us again and again. Why should Israelis have to live in constant fear of terrorists crossing the border and butchering their children in the middle of the night?
The US is saying the civilian death toll in Gaza has been too much. Too many innocent Palestinians have been killed, according to US Vice President Kamala Harris on Saturday. Your allies are losing patience with your tactics.
It's not our tactics. It's Hamas's tactics. It's Hamas that deliberately embeds itself under civilian structures. They build bunkers under hospitals. They build their network of subterranean tunnels under civilian areas. They store missiles in schools and even in UN facilities. We have to defeat Hamas at the same time, of course, make a maximum effort to avoid civilian casualties. But it's Hamas's strategy, and it's not just Israel that says so, the United States, Britain, the European Union have all said Hamas has adopted a strategy of using Gazan civilians to shield their war machine. This is a war crime. It's illegal under international humanitarian law. And yes, Hamas does it without batting an eyelid.
Of course, the IDF has agency, though. You can choose where to hit and you can choose whether or not to hit, given the amount of civilians in a particular area.
Correct. And that's why we've actually asked, and you reported this earlier, we've asked civilians to depart areas of expected combat simply because we don't want to see them caught up in the crossfire between the Israeli Defense Forces and the Hamas terrorists. We want to see civilians out of harm's way. That's why we've asked people to relocate. It's common sense.
How many people need to relocate?
It's in the tens of thousands. It's not the entire population of Khan Yunus. We're being very surgical. We know exactly in Khan Yunus where Hamas's military infrastructure is, where they have their arms depots, where they have their command and control, where they have their underground networks of tunnels. And in those neighborhoods, we're asking people to temporarily leave. So once again, so they don't get caught up in the crossfire.
Did you say the tens of thousands? Sorry.
Yes, yes.
The tens of thousands. Where will they go?
Well, we've designated areas outside Khan Yunus, areas where we don't expect there to be any fighting, with safer areas, and we've asked people to go there. And the truth is, I saw pictures today, I'm sure you've seen them at RTE as well, of Gazans heeding our advice, just as they did from the north. It's common sense. Move out of a combat zone. Don't stay to become cannon fodder for Hamas's crazy extremist ideology.
And those areas where you have told people to go, what is there there in terms of food and water and shelter?
Unfortunately, not enough. And the reason is, we gave the maps with the locations of these areas a few days ago already to the humanitarian organizations. But for political reasons, they say they can't be seen as collaborating with Israel. Well, that's their decision. So there's not enough there now. But as people move there now, I hope finally the humanitarian organizations will get their act together and start sending their tents and food and water. Israel will support such a move.
So if the humanitarian organizations don't do what Israel wants them to do, and tens of thousands of people are ordered to move by Israel under threat of bombing and loss of life if they don't move, can I take it that James Elder from UNICEF was correct when he spoke to us earlier, when he said the places that people are being sent to, women and children and injured people and elderly people, are just places of sand? There's no water, there's no toilets, there's no shelter, there's no food.
That's because they haven't set up their facilities, and they should, and I hope they do so now. But what
Who's
is the
they?
Alternative?
Sorry, who is they?
To leave the humanitarian organizations. That's exactly that. Their job is to save life, to help civilians. Now, are they telling Gaza civilians to stay in zones of combat? That would be extremely irresponsible for them to do so.
And does Israel have any responsibility here, Mark, if you don't mind me asking? Because Israel is the ones planting the bombs or firing the bombs. And
Israel is responding to a ferocious, horrific attack against our civilians who were butchered. Our women were raped in massive, like worse than anything anyone saw in the Balkans. Our families, entire families were burnt. They butchered the young people at the open-air music festival. They just opened up machine gun fire and massacred them. House after house and community after community was burned to the ground with its people inside. We were responding to Hamas's brutal violence. It is our right and obligation to protect our people from this threat. There was a humanitarian pause to get hostages out. Hamas broke the pause by refusing to release more hostages, even though it had agreed to a list. The people of Gaza know this. When this is over and the people of Gaza can speak freely, because Hamas will no longer rule at gunpoint, you will hear from the people of Gaza outrage, pent-up rage against what Hamas has done to them, what they have brought upon the people of Gaza.
Really? And do you think you'll hear from
you,
the people?
You don't sound serious. You think the people of Gaza support Hamas? Why are you so cynical?
Sorry,
Do you really think the people of Gaza wanted this war?
All right.
I mean, that's illogical what you've just said.
Well, I didn't say anything. I just said really.
You said really?
Yeah.
The people of Gaza are victims of Hamas. They have been ruling Gaza for 16 years, Hamas. Mm-hmm. And what have they brought the people of Gaza? They brought them bloodshed and misery and poverty. What has Hamas got to show for 16 years of rule, except for a record of bloodshed that is almost unparalleled?
I do have to challenge, though, any assertion that the people of Gaza will be grateful for what Israel is doing.
100%. When this is over and they're free of Hamas, just as the people of Iraq and Syria are free of ISIS after the Western coalition destroyed their territorial enclave, we will destroy at Hamas's rule over Gaza. Let me be clear, we're doing it for our own reasons. They attacked us viciously. Mm-hmm. They've said openly that they would attack us again and again and again if given the opportunity. But in destroying Hamas, we are doing Palestinians in Gaza a favor. Once again, they've been in power for 16 years. You know the situation in the Gaza Strip. You know what their record is.
Putting a point to you. You've locked them in an area where they can't get out. You've denied them of food, water, shelter. You've bombed their hospitals. You've destroyed over 50% of their homes. You've killed their family members. You've killed their children. I don't understand how you genuinely believe the people of Gaza will be grateful to Israel for what you're doing.
100%. I have no doubt. War is a terrible thing. We didn't want this war. We didn't start this war. We were responding to Hamas brutality against our people.
Can I ask you about the humanitarian aid?
But can I answer your question? Please allow me to answer your question. You say we've destroyed buildings and we've killed people. Mm-hmm. But you say it's all Israel's fault. Israel is responding to violence against our people. We are doing what any country would to defend its people. And I would ask you the following question. Hamas has no responsibility. Hamas, you've barely mentioned them in this interview. Hamas, which deliberately butchers our people and at the same time uses its own civilians as cannon fodder for its extreme radical militant ideology,
you are not doing what any country would. There are estimates of the casualties.
I disagree.
All right, can I put a point to you, if you don't mind, Mark?
And butchered your people, how would you respond if someone attacked Ireland and butchered your people?
I just put a point to you.
Would you expect your government not to defend your people?
The New York Times have done an analysis of the amount of people that have been killed in the timeline in which they've been killed, and they say people in Gaza are being killed more quickly than the deadliest moments of the US-led attacks in Iraq, Syria and Afghanistan. This is not what any country would do. Can I ask you about aid supply lines?
I disagree with what you've said.
All right,
I've been in meetings with US officials, and I can tell you that when this is over and the Hamas propaganda is put aside and people know the real numbers, I have no doubt whatsoever that when we compare the combat civilian ratio, which is the number of intended deaths, that's people that we want to kill, that's the Hamas terrorists.
All right.
And innocent civilians who we don't
want
to see hurt. But I just want to tell you, I think Israel and the Israeli Defense Forces, it'll be clear to everyone what efforts we've made to safeguard Gaza's civilian population.
You've restricted humanitarian aid again, and we heard from UNICEF earlier that they expect that the number of children who've been killed from bombs is going to be matched by the number of children who are going to be killed from disease. What justification is there for restricting humanitarian aid?
We don't restrict humanitarian aid. On the contrary, from our point of view, the crossings are open. And there's no restrictions whatsoever on medicines, on foodstuffs, on water. There is problems because of the war situation, but from Israel's point of view, why do you say not true?
I said it's not true. We are hearing from the aid agencies.
Who says?
The aid agencies I was speaking to just today, James Elder, who left Gaza today, he was leaving. And he said some aid is getting through.
Which aid agency does he respond to?
UNICEF.
The same aid agency that's not supplying tents? Look, UNICEF and the whole UN structure, they called for a unilateral ceasefire a month and a half ago. That would have left Hamas in power, and all our hostages, we managed to get out through the humanitarian pause that we had a week ago. We saved 101 people. All those people would still be in Hamas dungeons had we listened to the UN at the time. That's the truth.
UNICEF also said to us a little earlier on that of the people who've been killed, 40% of children have been killed, and James Elder was
Hamas's numbers. They're repeating Hamas's numbers.
Right,
unfortunately, they have no way to verify those numbers. They are repeating the Hamas-controlled, as you did at the beginning of this broadcast.
Eyewitness account
you
from
said the,
James
you said
Elder,
the Palestine
if you don't mind,
Ministry
Mark.
Of Health, but it's the Hamas Ministry of Health,
right.
Correct? It's the Hamas-controlled Ministry of Health. It's a terrorist organization.
James Elder
Why
was
do you
in,
take their numbers at face value?
If you wouldn't mind letting
Why do you take
me speak,
them?
Please. James Elder
But I'm just
was,
asking you a question.
James Elder was in a hospital in Khan Yunis earlier in Gaza, and he said the vast majority of the patients that he saw there were children, wounded from shrapnel and burns from bombing. He said this is a war on children. How does that chime with Israel's claim that you are defending or seeking to keep civilians safe?
So 100% correct, but we've had experience in hospitals in the north where you had doctors, Palestinian and foreigners, who never saw any Hamas in the hospital, and they repeated it. We've never seen any Hamas in the hospital. In the end, we proved conclusively that Hamas was in the hospital, and people just couldn't say it because of the realities of the situation where people can't speak out against this brutal Hamas regime. I'm sure it's the same in Khan Yunis too. Do you have any doubt that if Hamas can brutalize hospitals in the north, they can't do so in the south?
So is Hamas responsible for the injured children in Khan Yunis hospital that is overrun? All right.
Of course, 100%. If Hamas
can I ask
turns
you about
a hospital
being brought, that have broken down, you mentioned that was Hamas's fault. that they wouldn't release the hostages that they agreed to release. Now, Hamas says that that the 10 women that you were asking for release, among those were IDF soldiers.
So Hamas had an agreed list, and you don't have to ask me. You can ask the other people involved in the negotiations, because it's, you can verify what I'm saying. But there was a list that Hamas agreed to, and they agreed to release the people, and they reneged on their list. But if you want to believe Hamas, please do so.
And where does this end, can I ask you finally, Mark? Because I know that the plan is for Israel to expand its ground operation into all areas. Where should people go then to be safe?
I said before, in our designated areas that we've said will be safer for people to live there. It's definitely safer than staying in a combat zone. That's common sense. And we urge the humanitarian organizations, and we will do whatever we can to help. There should be their food, there should be their shelter, there should be medicine, field hospitals. We don't want to see harm come to the civilian population of Gaza.
And if that doesn't happen?
Sorry?
If that doesn't happen?
Then the humanitarian organizations will have to justify their budgets. How is it that they raise money around the world to help people and they're refusing to help the people of Gaza?
They say they won't help because it's forced migration. You're forcing people out of their homes.
It's not forced migration. I'd ask you, when Syrians left the Syrian civil war and moved to Jordan, was that forced migration? I don't know, but they moved out of a combat zone. When people leave the Ukraine to get out of a combat zone, it's the most natural thing. And here suddenly it's somehow not okay. To tell people, to force them to stay in a combat zone, you're condemning them to a fate. It's obviously better for them to leave. It's common sense. I don't understand why the point is even argued.
What will remain of the hostages? There's 136 hostages remaining in Gaza, including 119 men and 17 women and children. How do you plan to get them out?
So we fear for their fate. We've already had reports from the doctors who are treating with the people who were released. And we're very fearful for what those people are going through from what we're hearing from the people who were released. It's a terrible situation they're in. Hamas has shown us its brutality, the way it murdered people openly. And it's crazy. I mean, they actually filmed themselves murdering people, and you can see the glee on their faces as they're beheading and shooting people. It's crazy. Mm. So we do fear for them. We think the best way and the only way to get our hostages out is not to make the assumption that Hamas will somehow become humanitarians. In response to military pressure, and if we continue to hit Hamas's military machine and eliminate its command and control, when they're under pressure, we have a chance to get more hostages out, and we wait for that opportunity.
We'll leave it there, and thank you very much for joining us this evening. That is Mark Regev, Senior Advisor to the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu.